You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I am your host, Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte has joined me in the studio now, and on the phone we have the curator of the National Quilt Museum in Paducah, Judy Schwinder. Judy, thanks for being on Sounds Good.
Thank you for having me.
Judy, we envy you your proximity to these brilliant quilts, which are basically a story of the Civil War.
Oh, they definitely are. One thing that really comes through to me is that in the midst of such turmoil, I can't even imagine having the United, like, war on American soil, and here it was, American fighting American. In the midst of all that, people were creating beautiful things.
This exhibit from the Pieces of a Nation, Civil War Period Quilts, is showing at the National Quilt Museum through October. It's from the collection of Arlen and Pat Christ, who live in Berks County, Pennsylvania. They are extensive collectors.
Yes, they are. They are committed. It's interesting. They stopped by when the exhibit first opened, and it was fun to talk to them. I said, how did you get into this? And Arlen said, well, I decided instead of a 401k, I would do a 401q, meaning quilt. So that's what got them into collecting quilts. And they pulled from their collection is rather extensive, and they pulled 33 pieces to cover the years from 1850 to 1870, because obviously there was everything leading up to the war and everything that happened after the war. So it's really amazing what people produce. And not just women. One of the quilts was made by an Albert Seidel in 1860. And sometimes when men, you know, maybe were incapacitated or, you know, crippled or something, they would sew and help out and make quilts. So it wasn't unheard of, just as it isn't unheard of today. And so it's really neat to see what heart and soul they put into their bed coverings. And something about antique quilts that I like to see is, you know, that people have slept under them. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of contemporary quilts that are, say, competition quilts or art quilts that are meant for hanging on the wall don't have that feature and that aspect to them. So it's really quite wonderful to see these.
How do you explain the vibrancy of the colors?
Well, it's interesting about the prints and the colors in these quilts. Today, most of us wear solid colors. That's just kind of what we do. But back in the 19th century, these vivid prints were just desirable. They were something that people just wanted to have around them. And they weren't today. If you have cotton that you're making into a quilt, the printed cottons, they're actually pigments on the surface of the weave. But back in the 19th century, this is dye, so it actually permeates the cotton fiber. So it was a whole chemistry industry around creating these incredible colors. And fortunately for us today, because a lot of people think that, well, if it's a dark, you know, if it's all brown and dull, then it must be antique, and that's certainly not the case. One of the biggest factors was what we call turkey red. And to a European, or to an American or a European of the 18th and 19th centuries, anything past Constantinople was considered Turkey. And these textiles came from India, the complicated process to produce a color fast, vivid red. And so it was referred to as turkey red. And it was very desirable because it didn't bleed, because it didn't fade. If you're going to put a whole lot of effort into an incredible applique quilt with thousands of stitches, you don't want it to bleed or fade or, you know, basically not look good after a year or two. You want it to look really great. And it's funny, too, because when you think of cleaning things back in the day, it was, of course, a different, completely different process from what we have today. And it might have been, the fabric might have been boiled and stirred in a big pot that was boiling water. So to have really sturdy cloth, to have very color-fast, bright cloth was very desirable. I don't see necessarily women making dresses from bright red prints, but why not make quilts out of them?
Mm-hmm.
And indigo, of course, was very color-fast. Now, the greens of the time were mostly two-step greens. There wasn't a one-step color-fast green from the period. You would have a yellow dye and then a blue over dye.
Oh.
And so on some older quilts, particularly older chintz quilts, if you look at it and you say, why did they make the leaves and the stems blue? It's because the yellow was a fugitive dye. It was a dye that didn't hold up to time and to washing and so forth and to light. So the yellow went away and you were left with the blue. And the quilts that are in this particular group of quilts are, they're made from good cloth. And that, I find that to be very, very impressive.
Is there a prevalent pattern?
I would say it's in within this group of quilts, it's applique. And applique is where you cut a shape, like a leaf or a blossom or part of an urn or a vase, and you lay it on top of another piece of cloth, turn the edges under, and stitch it down with a very fine stitch that you can barely see. And there are a number of applique quilts in this group of 33 quilts. One that I particularly like, it's a presentation quilt that was given to, I have to get his name exactly right. It was made for the Reverend D.C. McCoy, and it was made in Illinois. And he served with the 137th Illinois Infantry Volunteers, and they were organized at Camp Wood in Quincy, Illinois. That's, you know, down where the rivers meet. And the regiment mustered on June 5th, 1864, and served for just 100 days. But he was given this quilt when he was ordained. And so it's dated circa 1869. So he did make it back from the war. And I guess I think to go through the war, to survive, to have people honor you by making you a quilt, that's very special, very, very special.
To survive was very special.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, because we think of all the amputated limbs and so forth, but there was so much disease because they didn't know about sanitation. They didn't know about how to disinfect things. And, gosh, and this is something, there's a really wonderful book that I suggest to people that want to know more about quilts in the Civil War, and it's called Homefront and Battlefield, Quilts in Context in the Civil War by Madeline Shaw and Lynn Bassett. And they talk in there about lint. Now, when you and I think of lint, we think of what we have to take out of the dryer screen so we don't cause a house fire. But there was lint gathered because wounds were packed with lint and then covered over with bandages. And there were people that basically collected lint for the cause. And I can't even imagine how horrible that must have been and how unsanitary, because maybe you got the lint from something that wasn't really clean.
Yeah, it's pretty even disgusting to think about it.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, some of these quilts, have stains on them. I know one lady, I got a call from the front desk. They said, a lady wants to talk about the stains on the quilts. And I went out and talked to her. And she said, you know, a little bit of this and that would take these stains out. And I said, well, that may very well be, but if you put chemicals onto the stain to take it out, you have to be able to take those chemicals out so they don't continue to eat at the quilt. And plus, if I was 150 years old, I'd expect to have a few stains too.
Yeah.
You know, and to have them, most of these quilts are in excellent condition. And sometimes, though, I look at the stains and I think, you know, is that somebody's blood? And that might sound kind of creepy to some people, but to me, it says to me that today we wash everything and you wear something once and you wouldn't consider wearing it again. You know, you have to wash it in hot water and everything seems so sterile. And to have these quilts survive with some stains, it's kind of a badge of honor. And it's a very human thing because these are stains caused by life, by the people that use the textiles. And I think that says a whole lot, that the quilt survived.
Tell me about the quilt that looks to have names embroidered on it.
Oh, we have album quilts and signature quilts. And some of them, I'm thinking of one in particular, there's a little fancy design next to the signature. So, and the signature is extremely precise. So it was done with what we call a name stamp. They were made out of metal, and you used ink and stamped things. And you could stamp paper for calling cards. You could stamp your linens. And nowadays, you know, we have avatars. And back then, they had these name stamps. And some of the signature quilts are handwritten signatures, and the penmanship is just beautiful. And here again, we don't know how to do longhand anymore. We do typing, and we do texting. So the longhand penmanship, the beautiful penmanship that you see in the signatures on some of these quilts is just gorgeous. And inks, many inks were homemade. It was whatever you could put together to make something that was fairly indelible and didn't bleed, you know, all over the place. Now, there are some signature quilts. Let me see if I can find that one. The quilts have, typically, a signature quilt is made when somebody moves away or when somebody changes status, say becomes married. And when you have these, it's interesting to see all the different names and how they all relate to a certain area. There's, let's see, on one quilt, the eight-pointed star that's from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the names are in the upper left-hand corner. And so there's a Martha Patterson Dunn, Martha Jane Dunn Stewart, and she was married, and Martha Stewart Wilkinson and Florence Wilkinson Strohecker. So they're all interconnected. It's almost like this particular quilt, it's kind of like eavesdropping on a bunch of friends having a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really connects. And I'm thinking of a listener who might know those names from their ancestry tree and be delighted to hear about them. Every quilt in the museum has a pretty lengthy provenance next to it. And it's really worth a trip to see this particular exhibit, as well as you've got the permanent collection and the Quilt Japan competition as well. Let's invite everybody to come to the National Quilt Museum. And if you don't mind, would you do the hours and the location, Judy?
The Quilt Museum is located in downtown Paducah, right down by the riverfront. And it's close to downtown, so it's fun to come for a day, go over and grab a bite for lunch, and come back over here. because you want to spend more than, you know, an hour here, I think. And the hours are 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday, and until the end of October, we will be open on Sunday from 1 to 5.
And you also have lovely docents floating around who will be sure to answer any extra questions you might have. So congratulations on a wonderful exhibit.
Thank you. And, we, you know, you mentioned that quilt Japan. That is turning out to be real popular, too. People love the antique quilts. It's just so personal. But then to see something, wow, that Japan has just embraced quilting. So it's so fun to see what is coming out of Japan.
Excellent. Thank you, Judy.
Well, thank you.
Judy Schwender is Curator of Collections and Registrar at the National Quilt Museum, 215 Jefferson Street in downtown Paducah.